Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schloem. If you are fortunate enough to be in the path of totality for the 2017 total solar eclipse visible across the United States, you know that a total eclipse of the sun is one of nature's greatest spectacles and something I wish everyone could experience at least once. And your next great opportunity is coming on April 8th, 2024. I remember hearing with sadness many stories of people who experienced the 2017 eclipse just a few hours away from the narrow path of totality who thought the eclipse was pretty neat. But for those of us who made the effort to get into that path, it was far beyond pretty neat and an experience that can be one of life's great moments. I saw the 2017 eclipse in eastern Oregon and it was truly awesome. One of the reasons I so enjoyed it was because of our guest, Gordon Telepin. He helped me prepare for and heighten the experience with his amazingly useful app, Solar Eclipse Timer. Gordon is a plastic surgeon by profession, but he's also a passionate eclipse chaser with a wealth of knowledge to share that can help you get ready for the next great solar eclipse that will be visible in much of the U.S. on April 8th, 2024. And here's the thing, the time to plan is right now. So joining us to talk about this upcoming celestial spectacle is eclipse expert and author of the new ebook Eclipse Day 2024 and more, How to Enjoy, Observe, and Photograph a Total Solar Eclipse. Gordon Telepin, welcome back to Blue Dot.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me. It's nice to speak with you again. You know, the last time we spoke was just before and then just after the 2017 eclipse. And, you know, you have such amazing guests on your show. I'm so honored that you think of me to have me as a guest.
Well, you earned it because my experience with the 2017 eclipse was heightened greatly by having your information at my fingertips. And we'll get to that later and how all of us can use that those tools that you provide. But let's start out, before we go anywhere further, let's just briefly find out, when did your passion for eclipses start? When did you become just hooked by the total eclipse phenomenon?
So I actually saw a partial eclipse when I was a little kid back in New Jersey, actually on the beach. It was summer vacation, and there was going to be a partial eclipse. The total was actually going through Canada, so it was partial in New Jersey. I was a little kid, but my dad knew about it for some reason, and he brought welder's glasses to the beach on our summer vacation so we could watch the partial phases on the beach in New Jersey. So that was kind of my first introduction. And then, you know, I've always been an astronomy advocate and a NASA fan. So the first eclipse I really wanted to go to, everybody refers to it as the big one, was the one that crossed Mexico in 1991, because that was a 6 minute and Whoa. 50 second eclipse. But I couldn't go because that was my first week of my second year of plastic surgery residency. And for anybody who knows how medical training goes, residents start in July. So there's no way you can get a vacation in July. So I couldn't go to it. Oh. And then the next one was
Before you go any further.
Yeah.
Just to give our listeners an idea of, like, that is an extremely long total solar eclipse.
That's extremely long.
For you know, to compare it to 2017 was what, 2 minutes and 30 seconds?
Yes. Yeah, so 2017, if you were at the point of greatest eclipse in Kentucky, it was about 2 minutes and 40 seconds. Yeah. So 6 minutes and 53 seconds is really long. And, you know, the maximum total solar eclipse duration you could have, if all of the circumstances are correct with you on Earth, would be about 7 minutes and 30 seconds. So, yeah, so 650 is great. But look, 2024 in Mexico and southwestern Texas, it's going to be 4 minutes and 20 seconds. So this is a big eclipse coming, Dave.
Yeah, and it's intense, and it's one of those things where it's like the old saying, you know, if you put your hand on a stove for a few seconds, it's way too long. And if you put your arm around, you know, your loved one, it just ends way too soon. And that's the way eclipses are. It's so intense and beautiful and wonderful, and it goes by fast.
It does
that's
go why, by fast.
That's why we want to have this program, is to, you know, be prepared to experience all that. So, okay, let's talk about April 8th, 2024, give us the basic eclipse path, because this eclipse really does pass through a lot of places that will give many millions of people an opportunity to see this.
Yes, that's correct, Dave. So the 2017 eclipse, as you know, started in on the West Coast in Oregon and exited through South Carolina. And a lot of people are able to see it, but it crossed a lot of the country, you know, in the West that was sparsely populated. But still, you know, I don't know, 20 or 30 million people got to see that eclipse. But in 2024, this eclipse hits the coast of Mexico first, and then hits the United States on the southern border in Texas, and then crosses through the country and exits Maine. So this eclipse crosses much more populated areas. Just to give you an example, like some of the major metropolitan areas across the eclipse path, going from southwest to northeast, will be Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, and then Little Rock, Carbondale, Indianapolis, Dayton, Cleveland, Buffalo, Rochester, New York, Syracuse and Burlington, Vermont. So, I mean, this is crossing really populated states and huge metropolitan areas. So, you know, it's estimated that 30 million people live in the path. And for this eclipse, maybe 50 million people will try to see the eclipse in the path. And you know, over 100 million people live within a couple of hundred miles of the path and will drive into the path. So this is a big deal because of the location of this path.
Yeah, like you said, this presents probably the greatest opportunity for most Americans in their lifetimes to see a total solar eclipse.
Absolutely. And so you bring up a great point. You know, the 17 eclipse, before that eclipse, the last one that hit the United States was in 1979, and it was basically limited to the Northwest. So there was a long time between eclipses hitting the continental United States. So there was a lot of buzz about it. There's no question about it. A lot of the buzz, you know, happened late with the media, you know, right before the eclipse. But this eclipse, since 2017, this is a lot more on people's radar screen. So a lot of people saw the 17 eclipse, and they're going to want to see the 24 eclipse because they're going to want to experience it again. But I know a lot of people that missed the 2017 eclipse because they kind of didn't really know what it was all about, or they didn't take off from work or whatever. And then when they heard the stories about what they had missed, I know they're not going to miss 24. So there's a lot of people who saw 17 and want to see another one. There's a lot of people who missed 17 and are not going to want to miss 24.
Yeah, and that was one of my personal experiences that I found interesting from a sociological point of view, was talking to people who saw the eclipse as a partial eclipse and were like, oh yeah, no, that was really cool. I got to see the eclipse. Well, where were you? And they tell me, and it's like, well, no, you weren't in the path of totality. Yeah, but it was really cool. And to get across to them about what they missed out on is really difficult. My analogy, as imperfect as it is like, it's the difference between giving grandma a kiss on the cheek or having passionate making love to the person you're most in love with in the entire world for the very first time. It's just that big a difference.
It's an amazing experience. I mean, it's hard to explain it. I mean, I have a lot of eclipse books that try to explain what the experience is like. You know, in my book, I don't try to explain it and I don't know, be touchy-feely about it. That's not my personality, and that's not the way I write. I'll leave that up to other people. I just try to prepare people so that not only do they see totality, but they get the most out of the entire day, because there's a lot to an eclipse besides just totality. And that's why my book is titled and subtitled the way it is. And that's why my book is organized by how eclipse day progresses from beginning to end. And that's why it's different. I want people to enjoy the whole day with their friends and family and children and just get the most out of it. Because people are not going to be international eclipse chasers like I'm blessed to be. This may be their second eclipse, or there may be their first and only eclipse. And I just want them to get the most out of it.
Yeah, and there is so much, and we'll get to a lot of that as the show goes on. But let's just back up a bit and do a little Eclipse 101.
Sure.
People tend to think of solar eclipses as rare, and many people have seen lunar eclipses because they're pretty easy to see.
Right.
Maybe can you walk us through the difference between, like, why is it that it's so easy to see a lunar eclipse? You know, I've seen many total lunar eclipses.
Right.
But seeing a total solar eclipse, that one, that, you know, that may take some effort as far as travel on your part.
That's exactly right, because the path of the umbra, which is the shadow of the moon created on the Earth, is relatively narrow, and it sweeps across the surface of the Earth at a very rapid rate. And when I say narrow, you know, the 2017 eclipse had a maximum width of about 70 miles in Kentucky, and 2024, I believe, will be about 160 miles at its widest point in Texas. So when you take the dimension of 70 miles and you lay that on, you know, the entire United States or the whole world for that point, you have to get to the path. You have to know where to be and at the right time. The other thing is, you know, the Earth is 70 or 71% water. So a lot of these eclipse paths cross the oceans, which are inaccessible, or they cross countries and land masses that are inaccessible or unstable, you know, politically, and you just can't get to them. So it's very difficult. And then, of course, it happens during the day, and it's very short. You know, lunar eclipses happen at night, and they're very long. And you need good weather for both, but you certainly need good weather, you know, for a total solar eclipse. So it just limits your ability to get to one.
Yeah, and because the Earth's shadow is so much larger than the moon's, you get like a hemisphere of coverage for a lunar eclipse where, you know, many, many people can see it. You don't have to travel. And it is pretty, but it's not the spectacle of a total solar eclipse.
No.
Which I would rank about all the things that I've experienced in my life. I put that right up there with the first time I ever saw the Aurora Borealis. Mm-hmm. It's just a mind-blowingly beautiful experience.
Yeah, it's crazy. In real time, to watch it happen, that few seconds before totality and then totality, and that few seconds coming out of totality, is wonderful. That's why it's so much fun to watch videos of that
people's
period
reactions.
Of time. Yeah, the people's reactions. The audio is almost as fun as the video in eclipse videos.
It is. And okay, one of the main things in your book, one of the great things, is about photography.
Yeah.
And of course, everyone now has, you know, cell phone with great cameras, or they have good camera equipment. But photographing a total solar eclipse takes a lot of planning and work. I would like to know, what would your advice be for, like, a first-time eclipse experiencer, to photograph or not?
So that's a great
tough question.
Yeah, and it's sometimes controversial. I mean, there are eclipse authors out there that will say, if you're going to your first total eclipse, don't try to take pictures, just take it in and enjoy it. And I actually don't agree with that. I think you will treasure getting at least a couple of your own photographs of an eclipse. And it'll bring back great memories for you and your family and friends. And it's actually, it takes some planning, but it's not that difficult to do. You can get good quality photographs, but, you know, you have to plan ahead. You can't do it 5 days before the eclipse. I mean, you need to be starting to plan your photography gear and how you're going to execute your plan, you know, 5 or 6 months or a year before the eclipse. It's important, but I don't agree with just watching it. I think you should try to document it. And the 2024 eclipse is long. Like you said, it does go fast, but, you know, the eclipse is over 4 minutes well into Indiana, and then it exits Maine still with like 3 minutes and 23 seconds or something. So that's enough time to take some of your own shots and still enjoy it with your eyes. And, you know, we always recommend that people enjoy totality, naked eye view. It's safe to watch totality with your naked eyes. It's not safe to watch any other portion of the eclipse with your naked eyes, but it's beautiful to see. It's spectacular.
Yeah. And my experience was, as a, you know, pretty experienced photographer, is that I kind of approached it with a kind of a halfway point of view, was I didn't want the photography to overwhelm my experience. I wanted to enjoy the eclipse, but I wanted to get a couple of, you know, a couple of trophy shots to hang on the wall. So I just kind of was like mindful of, okay, I'm going to take a few pictures, but I'm not going to get obsessed about this. I know that there are people who are much better photographers, eclipse photographers than I am, that are going to get spectacular shots. I just want one that's, you know, kind of like, yeah, this is mine. I was there.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
We're going to take a short break, but stay with us. When we come back, we'll continue our look at the upcoming 2024 total solar eclipse, visible for much of the United States, with eclipse photographer and expert Gordon Telepin. I'm Dave Shlohm, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back. Let's return now to my interview with Gordon Telepin. Gordon is the creator of the Solar Eclipse Timer app and the author of the new ebook, Eclipse Day 2024 and More. The Eclipse Timer app. When did you first come up with this idea?
When I went to my first eclipse, it was in 2001 in Zambia, Africa. And I prepared a lot for that eclipse. You know, one of my idols is Fred Espenick. I read all of his books and all of his stuff, and I wanted to get good photography. And I was totally ill-prepared for how exciting the event becomes right before totality. And I missed the timing of getting my proper images going into totality at second contact and coming out of totality at third contact. Because I realized there is no way, if you're a photographer and you want to photograph this eclipse, there's no way you can time it on your watch. The timing just has to be more accurate than that. So I immediately came home and started working on my first version of the timing app, which then again I used, and I got it ready in a year, and I used it in 2002, again back in Africa, that time in Zimbabwe. And that was a completely manual version of a talking timer, basically. So it had the four contact times and max eclipse, and it would announce when those contact times were happening, and it would count down to them to give you warning. So you didn't have to look at your watch. It was audible. I think that was the thing that I thought about that was really the benefit, was a talking timer. The problem was, this is way before mobile devices and geolocation. So you had to manually put the times into the slots. So you had to manually program first contact, second contact, max eclipse, third contact, then fourth contact. And there was error in that, because you had to extrapolate from the printed local circumstances of the eclipse for your location on the path. So there was just error in trying to take those charts and figure out how many seconds you should plus or minus depending on where you were, because the charts were usually divided into, I don't know, every 10 or 15 seconds along the path. So anyway, I used that in 2002. I didn't use it in 2006 because I was on a cruise ship, and cruise ships are moving targets, so there's no way to time down to the second. But then in 2017, when now we had mobile devices with automatic geolocation, I redid the app completely for the 2017 eclipse so that people could geolocate at their position, and then the app calculates the exact contact times, you know, to within a tenth of a second, although it, you know, it displays a second. So that was a game changer, having, you know, mobile devices with the computing power that they have and the ability to geolocate and put that information right into that very complex eclipse formula that calculates the contact times, which, you know, I can't do that math, but the computers can. that was the game changer for 2017. And that app just helped a lot of people time the eclipse for photography. But again, as you know, and we talked about it after the 2017 eclipse, the other thing that's my passion is teaching about the partial phase phenomena. You know, so observing for temperature changes, observing for lighting changes, pinhole projection, animal behavior. So all of those announcements are also made during the first partial phases. So people are aware and can enjoy what we call the partial phase phenomena, because the sun is being completely mechanically blocked by the moon. And there's no other time on Earth when you can experience that kind of change in the electromagnetic energy being delivered to Earth.
Yeah, well, we'll go through that in more detail in just a second. But let's just go through an eclipse experience with you as our guide. Okay. The first thing you need to do is plan ahead, and I would recommend starting yesterday.
That's exactly right.
Because 2024 is right around the corner, and as anybody who tried to find accommodations for the 2017 eclipse, maybe rudely found out. It isn't easy. You better have a place that you have a spot to be, and you better have it lined up at least a year in advance or 6 months, or you could be, you know, kind of out of luck, really, you know, just trying to find a field somewhere.
Absolutely. And it's going to be difficult because most of the hotels won't even take, you know, advanced reserve booking till about a year before the date. And all the hotels are going to know that the eclipse is coming, and they'll probably raise their rates. It'll be difficult. And yeah, you need to plan ahead. You at least need to know where you want to go. And you need to have a list of accommodations in the area, either within the path or within a short driving distance outside of the path. And then you need to have a safe place to set up, because I mean, you know, setting up on the side of the road or the side of an interstate highway can be dangerous, and there's going to be a lot of noise. And so there's a couple of things to plan ahead: accommodations and where you're going to set up. And then, of course, it's a long event. You're going to want to get to your observing site, I don't know, an hour or 2 hours before, depending on how much gear you're going to want to set up. Then first contact to fourth contact takes about 3 hours. And then it's going to take 2 or 3 hours to get out of there, at least because of traffic. So one of the major things about eclipse preparation is facilities. You know, you have to plan ahead for bathroom facilities. April should the temperature hopefully will be pretty mild. It won't be extremely hot like it can be in the summer. But you have to, you know, plan for climate, and you have to plan for food and water. And bathroom facilities for an event that's going to last 6 to 8 hours.
And my recommendation would be, if you can possibly do it, is to get there like the day before, hunker down, and wait till the day after to leave. If you can do that, because like you said, that, you know, leaving after the eclipse and the hours after the eclipse, it could be a traffic nightmare.
Absolutely. And we learned a lot about that with the 2017 eclipse, because people will go to their eclipse observing location over about 2 or 3 days before eclipse day, but everybody wants to leave immediately. Yeah. So after the eclipse, there were traffic jams like crazy after 2017. So that's a great recommendation. Great point you bring up, Dave. Is
wait till the next day if you can.
And that's what we did in 2017.
Okay, let's go through an eclipse now.
Okay.
You've mentioned these contacts. And so for people who don't know, what is first contact?
So first contact is the calculated time that the edge of the moon will just touch the edge of the sun in the sky. And so depending on your location and kind of the angle of the path will determine where that first little bite is going to be on the sun. If you look at the sun as a clock face, where it's going to touch it. But for the most part, the moon is going to be approaching from the west and moving into the sun, going from west to east. That's first contact. First contact is actually the mathematical time that happens. Now, the interesting thing is that at first contact, it's an exciting time, but you don't see anything. It takes a few seconds at least, multiple seconds, for the moon to take enough of the bite out of the sun that you can see it with your eyes or even your camera.
And one of the things, and your book goes through all of this in detail, and what's wonderful about it is, you know, it could definitely be your guide to how to go about experiencing this, and you can study it and prepare, and it's really well laid out. And the app makes it super simple, because you remind us when to experience these interesting things. And what I loved about having the app was having your voice there to remind me to check things out, because there are so many interesting things that happen. So let's go through some of those. First of all, there's the fascinating experience of temperature change. Right. And I remember the app telling me, you know, notice temperature changes. And at the time I thought, well, do I just think I'm feeling this because the app told me to? And so I asked somebody, I said, do you notice anything about the temperature? Yeah, it feels like it got a little cooler. That is really an interesting experience.
Yeah, it is. So basically the moon is becoming a dimmer switch. It's shutting off the radiant energy to the Earth. And our ambient temperature on the ground is a function of the ground absorbing the radiant energy from the sun and creating the warmth that we feel around us. So when you start to shut off the amount of energy that the Earth can absorb, there is a slow and progressive decrease in temperature through the partial phases, and you definitely will feel it. You know that probably the average eclipse will drop about 10, 12, or 15 degrees Fahrenheit. And you can definitely sense that.
Yeah, and what I noticed is it happens pretty quickly.
It does.
It's very noticeable, and it's like, woo.
And I wanted to just mention that the chapters in my book follow the progression of the announcements in the app. So it works together. My app makes announcements at certain times between first contact and second contact. And then the book chapters are numbered to follow that.
Okay, another fascinating aspect of this is how the lighting changes through the first contact as you get to towards totality. Can you walk us through some of the really interesting aspects of that?
So in terms of lighting changes, let's go through some of the most simple ones first. The most interesting one, and everybody always likes to do it, is the concept of pinhole projection images. You know, the little crescent suns that get projected on the ground through leaves in a tree or a kitchen colander or whatever you want to use that creates a little pinhole. So that's one of the interesting lighting effects.
That is way fun. And to me, the most fun way to experience it is under a tree.
Absolutely.
Especially if there's a little breeze blowing, got all these little crescent suns on the ground dappling and moving around. It's really cool.
That's exactly right. And so the concept of that is the concept of what is called camera obscura, where an image can go through a pinhole and be projected into a dark room behind the pinhole or in a camera, a pinhole camera, but it gets projected upside down and reversed left to right. So the same thing happens with pinhole crescents. There's not enough detail for you to see it, but they're being projected upside down and reversed left to right. The next interesting lighting effect before we get to the Purkinje effect is the effect of sharp and fuzzy shadows, which I think is totally amazing.
Oh yeah.
People will post pictures to the internet after an eclipse of their shadows on the ground, and they won't quite know what to say about them. They'll just know that they're different because they haven't, you know, done the research to understand what's going on. But when the moon is blocking the sun, and the sun now is not a big globe of light, the light is actually reaching the Earth in a more linear fashion. It's amazing to think that light that is starting 94 million miles away can actually be switched to something hitting us linearly. So when you create a shadow on the ground with the crescent sun behind you, if you create the shadow with the object creating the shadow in line with the crescent, the shadows have crisp sides to them on the ground. So if you're using your arm, for example, and you create a linear arm on the ground, but behind you, the crescent is in line with your arm, the shadows you create on the ground will be sharply defined on the edges. Then if you turn your hand or you turn your arm 90 degrees, the shadows become fuzzy. And the reason is the long axis of the crescent sun can still function as what we call an extended source of light. So the light rays can cross your arm from top to bottom and from bottom to top, and they can make a fuzzy shadow, which is the same thing as creating an umbra and a penumbra. So that's the penumbra effect.
Wait, and so let's just quickly back up. Penumbra, outer cone of shadow, and umbra, inner cone of shadow.
That's right. So the umbra is the deep, dark shadow where you witness totality, because that is the direct shadow of the moon. The penumbra is the more gray zone where you will not witness totality. You would only see a partial eclipse if you were in the penumbra, because the light rays can cross the moon in multiple directions, and they create basically a fuzzy shadow or a lighter shadow on the Earth. But the terms penumbra and umbra can be used to explain the shadows you create on the ground by yourself with the sharp and fuzzy experiment, which is a chapter in my book.
Yeah, and then again, the app, what's so great is it tells you, you know, these are the kinds of things you can experience right now.
It makes a reminder to look for that at a certain point. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of it, because you can get so overwhelmed with, you know, just looking up at the sky that you miss out on all these other fun things to do. And that's what makes, you know, experiencing and enjoying the eclipse so much better when you are prepared, and especially getting those nice, calm reminders from the app. Because you can get really excited and forget to do things. And we can talk about that in terms of photography and glasses and stuff in just a minute. What would be some other cool things during the partial phase?
So let's talk about the Purkinje effect, because that's the last big lighting effect. And this is something you can definitely miss, because this is going to happen in about the last 2 or 3 minutes before totality, where everything is getting very, very exciting. So the Purkinje effect has to do with our retinas and the fact that we have two types of cells in the retina that allow us to see. And one type of cell is the cones, which see color vision. And the other type of cell are the rods, which are our night vision cells. And they are just in black and white. So what happens in the last few minutes before totality, you have to realize that it's been getting slowly, slowly dimmer over an hour and 20 minutes. And picture yourself in a bright room and somebody's standing at a dimmer switch that controls the light. And that dimmer switch is so sensitive that they can turn it and adjust the light very slowly over an hour and 20 minutes. And that's not something you would normally do with a dimmer switch, but picture doing that. Your eye and your brain has such an amazing ability to compensate for that slow decrease in light that you don't even realize it's getting dimmer till about 5 or 8 minutes before totality. I mean, your retina, the biochemistry of your retina is compensating like crazy. But then there becomes a point where it can't compensate anymore. And there are not enough photons to allow your cone cells, which are the color cells, to fire, and your rod cells, your night vision cells, start to take over. And since they are black and white, all of the colors in your surroundings start to get muted. And the Purkinje effect really talks about the fact that the reds get bland and the green and blues should get more distinct. Now, at an eclipse, you don't really see the greens and the blues get more distinct, but you definitely see the reds get more bland. And what it looks like to you when you're experiencing it, it's like you've slipped on a pair of very light gray sunglasses with just a little bit of a silver metallic tint to it. It's really dramatic. It only happens for about 2 minutes, and you have to be aware to look for it. And again, you know, my app tells you to look for it. And if you understand the concept, it is more enjoyable for you.
What I experienced when I saw that was, yeah, I felt like I was on another planet.
Exactly.
The lighting was so weird that it was just like, oh my gosh, this feels like I'm on an alien world.
That's exactly, you know, weird is the great word for it. It just describes it perfectly. I mean, it's not very eloquent, but it is weird.
Oh, it's weird. Yeah.
Yeah. And it only happens for a couple of minutes. So you have to be aware of it.
Yeah. And you mentioned something in the book about being the landscape and the colors you're around, like if people are wearing like browns and things like that, it won't be as dramatic as if they're wearing colorful clothes and you're in a more colorful place. Is that true?
That's exactly right. So why that is to experience the Purkinje effect. Your surrounding colors have to be the proper target. So you need a lot of reds and a lot of greens. And I noticed that in my own experience between the eclipse in 2017, which was in the summertime on a green field with people wearing a lot of bright summertime clothes, I experienced an amazing Purkinje effect. But in 2019, with an eclipse in Argentina in the winter, on a brown dirt field with people wearing more winter colors, I didn't experience the Purkinje effect because your eyes don't have the proper target. So that's why a crazy recommendation I have, I didn't think about this in 2017, but the 2019 eclipse made it more clear to me that a crazy recommendation I have for the 2024 eclipse is have your friends and family wear a mixture
colorful
of green and red clothes.
Greens
so you have reds. You have yeah. target for the Purkinje effect.
Let's take a short break, but stay with us as we continue our conversation with eclipse expert Gordon Telepin as we look forward to the next total solar eclipse coming for much of the United States in 2024. I'm Dave Shlohm, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening. Let's return now to my conversation with Gordon Telepin as we look forward to the next great solar eclipse visible in the United States on April 8th, 2024. All right, well, let's move along. Interesting animal behavior has always been a fascinating part of eclipse experiences.
That's exactly right. So we're humans, and we're smart, and we know to get into the path, and we know the eclipse is happening. But animals don't know the eclipse is happening. They just think it's getting darker. So animals will begin their nighttime behaviors, you know, whatever those are, about 10 or 15 minutes before the eclipse. So, you know, the easiest one for people to experience if you're in a natural environment, you know, out of the city, is crickets chirping. Crickets will start to chirp like crazy about 10 or 15 minutes before the eclipse.
And birds will quiet down.
And birds will stop singing. The other thing, if you look up in the sky and you see a group of birds flying, just be aware that it's probably not just random flight. They are probably going to their nighttime, you know, roosting position.
Time to roost.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's time to roost. So, and bees will stop flying. Bees were studied a lot in the 2017 eclipse. So there's a lot of information on the internet about how bees behaved during the change in lighting.
So definitely worth, and again, you get a reminder to, you know, hey, check it out. If you've got animals
exactly.
and birds and things around you, to check that out. Okay, exactly. Now let's talk about one of my favorite things and was one of the truly strange phenomena, shadow bands. Yeah. I was very fortunate that where I was, somebody had parked a big bus with a white side next to my mm-hmm. campsite. And at first mm-hmm. I was very irritated by that. But then when I got the reminder to look for shadow bands, I looked at the side of the bus and there they were.
Yeah.
And could you describe those for, or, because they, I don't know, the best way I could describe them is they look like weird gray shadowy snakes moving along
right.
the side of the bus. Very strange and very, very compelling to look at.
Oh, it's exciting to see shadow bands. Yeah, so they happen within the last 90 seconds or so, maybe 2 minutes before totality, and then just after totality, because they only happen at the point where the crescent is so thin that the light coming through the atmosphere is basically a slit of light at this point. And so the atmosphere can perturb the light. It's not exactly clear what actually makes the shadow bands, but it's thought to be some sort of refraction or adding or subtracting positive and negative waves of the light as it flutters through the atmosphere.
It looks like an interference pattern.
It's an interference pattern. That's exactly right. So they're very low contrast gray shadows that you see on the ground. Different observing positions will look different. Sometimes they'll always be in rows because the slit will make them be in rows. And sometimes they'll look like the little shadows are leapfrogging each other. They're kind of jumping along in the rows.
Yeah.
And then the rows can move either slowly or rapidly to your left or to your right. So there's multiple dimensions to the movements of the shadow. Again, they can look like they're moving away from you or towards you. And the rows will be shifting from left to right, depending on the altitude of the eclipse, will depend on how long or short the actual little gray shadows are. But, you know, that's why you saw it on a white bus. And that's why I always make the recommendation. And, you know, I do in the book and I do in my YouTube videos to bring some kind of white sheet or some kind of white background.
Something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I highly recommend that.
Yeah. To your observing site. Cause you won't see them on regular grass or something that won't let you help see the contrast.
You need something. You need a screen. You need a white screen of some kind. Okay.
Exactly.
Now we get to the really good stuff. Second contact. One of the most spectacular parts is the diamond ring effect. And anybody who's in the eclipse, that's where you get a lot of ahs and oohs.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us about Bailey's beads and the diamond ring effect.
The diamond ring effect. Yes. Yeah, so this is the last few seconds before you get to second contact, which is the calculated time that the moon is completely obscuring the sun. And right before that, the last little bit of photosphere makes a very bright blob of light on one side of the sun, and that's called the diamond ring. Little dangerous to look at it with your naked eyes, also, although some people take some quick peeks. Photographing it is wonderful, but this is, again, something where timing is key. You have to start photographing for the diamond ring 20 to 30 seconds before second contact, the calculated time. And you have to remember to remove your solar filter to do it. And again, that's where my app helps the photographers. So that's the photosphere, a limb of photosphere disappearing behind the moon. And then Bailey's beads are fascinating. They're the last tiny little bits of photosphere that is coming through the uneven surface of the limb of the moon. So the craters and the mountains of the limb of the moon allow these little last points of photosphere to poke through. And that's what causes Bailey's beads. And that only lasts for about 8 or 10 seconds. And then all of a sudden you're in totality. So if you want to photograph that, those two things, you really need to have your timing and your plan down.
Yeah. And if you're not, you'll just see it and it's spectacular. Okay. You mentioned something very important, and this is a key point. You have to be ready to take your eclipse glasses or filters off as soon as you hit that moment of totality or right thereafter, or you're going to miss the show.
Correct.
You know, I heard horror stories about people who kept their glasses on during totality, thinking it was unsafe to look at. I use binoculars with no filters, no nothing. And I was just a magnificent experience. So let's talk about some of the great things to see during totality. One thing you tend to notice is people tend to get quieter. The awe starts to take over. And I think the most spectacular thing is, you know, seeing some of the planets come out during the daytime and some of the bright stars. But the most spectacular thing of all is the corona. And I don't even know how to describe what that light really looks like, but it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it is. And the corona is hard to explain because it has such a dynamic range of brightness when you're looking at it with your eyes. So, you know, it's brighter closer into the moon, and then it fades out. And it pulsates a little bit because of the atmosphere. Yes. So it moves. It's like a pulsating, you know, eyeball up there. The moon is just a black ink drop in the middle, and then the glistening silvery corona around it. And then, you know, the dark sky right around the eclipse is really, really dark, not quite black, but really gray. And then, you know, as you get away from the eclipse a little bit, it starts to get kind of a gray blue and lightens as you get to the horizon. So the whole spectacle is amazing. And, you know, one of the other things I talk about in the book, as astronomers or sky watchers, we never get to look at anything in the sky that's that big, right? I mean, we can see the full moon, and that's pretty big. And the sun obviously is the size of the full moon. Otherwise, we wouldn't have an eclipse. But with your eyes, you know, you're actually seeing something in the sky that's 2 or 2.5 moon diameters on each side. So picture a full moon, and then picture it being 5 times as big. I mean, that's the amazing thing about an eclipse. We never get to see anything in astronomy that's that big and that beautiful.
Oh, and it is. And it's that pearly, silvery light. It's mm-hmm. just, it's hard to describe. You know, it's not a color like I've ever seen before. Okay. Yeah. And then you don't want to forget, and you get reminded on the eclipse timer, to look around you at the horizon, because that mm-hmm. is spectacular.
Yeah, there are two important announcements that you don't want to forget during totality, because you're so enthralled with the corona. You mentioned one before, that's planets and stars. So every eclipse in every observing position will have different visibility of planets. You know, 2017 had wonderful visibility of Venus. 2024 will have Jupiter and Venus in the sky, and they'll be wonderful. And, you know, my book talks about the astronomy of that, which is amazing. And people have to understand, you're looking at something that's in the sky during the day, because basically you're seeing the nighttime sky during the day. So you're seeing the planets on the other side of the solar system, because the, you know, the sun is obscured. So it's amazing astronomy. And then being reminded to look at the horizon around you, because you have to picture what's happening. You're standing in the center of the dark shadow of the moon, the umbra, but the sunlight is still hitting the perimeter of the umbra.
Because like you said, it's only what, like 75, 100 miles across?
That's exactly right. So if you're in a 100-mile umbra, the perimeter is 50 miles away from you. And the light on the perimeter of the umbra behaves in the same fashion as light behaves as in a sunset or a sunrise. It kind of gets bent through the atmosphere and creates the sunrise and sunset colors, except now it's not just limited to the east and the west. It's 360 degrees around you. So if you're in a flat environment observing the eclipse, or if you're in an elevated area, you need to be reminded to look around 360 degrees and just look at this sunset colored horizon completely around you, because you're standing in the shadow. It's really something to see.
And before we let you go, where can people get the book?
So I'm only doing it in an ebook form because it's multimedia. You know, it has videos in it, it has audio in it, it has picture galleries in it. So right now it is available as an Apple download for tablets, or as a Android download for tablets. And I'm working on making it compatible for Kindle Fires as a download for Kindle. I just don't think you could get what you need to get out of this book if it was in print. So I think I have to continue to just have it electronic, so it's multimedia and interactive.
Yeah, and kind of like you said, you can take as deep a dive into the information as you care to, depending on whether you're really interested in some of the physics behind one of those phenomena, or you're going to be a photographer or videographer, or you just want to experience it.
my book has a lot of pictures and a lot of illustrations and a lot of what I call dialogue boxes, which are little one-line helpful tip boxes. If you just looked at the pictures and read the captions in my book and you didn't read anything else, you would know more than 95% of the people who are going to go to the eclipse who haven't prepared at all.
Well, best of luck to you and all of us who try to experience the eclipse in 2024. Mm-hmm. Thanks again for being on Blue Dot with us, Gordon. Really enjoyed talking to you.
Oh, thank you, Dave. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks again to our guest, eclipse photographer and expert Gordon Tullipin. If you're interested in experiencing the total solar eclipse of 2024, and I so hope you are because a total eclipse of the sun is literally awesome, I highly recommend you download the Solar Eclipse Timer app and check out Gordon's ebook, Eclipse Day 2024 and More, How to Enjoy, Observe, and Photograph a Total Solar Eclipse. You can check out both on Gordon's website, solareclipsetimer.com. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio, a service of Cap Radio in beautiful and talented Northern California. We're distributed by PRX. If you want to revisit, share, or check out past episodes, you can do just that on our website, mynspr.org. And while you're at it, subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode on our website, the NPR One app, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. The theme music is by Matt Schiltz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the maestro, Matt Fiddler. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.